Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to a Why Can't We podcast called This Sport Pod. My name is Peter Harding.
I'm Naledi Apani.
And I'm Sean Malone.
On this sport podcast, we're looking to introduce you to the world of disability sports.
We'll be speaking to athletes and those involved in disability sport, with plenty of surprises along the way.
Why Can't We was set up almost 10 years ago to help increase awareness of para sport, and we're on a mission to keep everyone up to date with disability sports news.
So make sure you follow the campaign on social media, on our website, and why not download the app.
But most importantly, subscribe to the podcast and enjoy the next episode.
Hello and welcome to This Sport Pod.
We have a very special guest today, but first, let's bring you up to date with all the news in the para sports world.
Ahead of the England squads preparing for the international break, the men's squad released the new football kits alongside the para teams and the women's team.
In table tennis, there was a brilliant win for Billy Shilton in the ITTF Costa Brava Spanish Open, a silver medal for Fliss Picard, and bronze medals for Tom Matthews, Jack Hunter-Spivey, and Martin Perry.
In Italy, the Para Swimming World Series 2024 was in full swing, with Alice Tai claiming 2 gold medals, Olivia Newman-Baranis taking 3 golds and a bronze, Tali Kearney earned a gold, and Ellie Challis took a silver, as well as Grace Harvey receiving a bronze.
Andy Lefthorne and Greg Slade completed a dominant week for the Lexus GP World Team Cup at the European Qualification Quad event in Latvia after a 2-0 victory over Germany on Sunday, sealed Great Britain's return to the Quad World Group of 8 elite nations.
Our GB paracycling team were incredible at the UCI Paracycling Track World Championships. They topped the table and claimed an impressive medal haul of 31 medals. That means that they won 13 gold, 13 silver and 5 bronze.
Well done to all the athletes we've mentioned and those who are doing amazing things who we haven't mentioned as well. Remember to check out Why Can't We on social media and of course on the website.
Hello and welcome to This Sport Pod, and thank you for joining us. Today we've got an amazing guest. He's a Paralympic genius and also marathon runner and so on and so forth. Richard Whitehead, hello.
Hi, how are you? Yeah, really good, thanks. Yeah, really good at the moment. Obviously, we're in March and it's normally a really kind of changing season time of year. And for me, it's getting ready for, obviously, the events that I normally compete in. So I'm normally happy and smiley, getting ready for obviously this summer and what the year brings, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's an exciting year to look forward to, definitely.
For sure, yeah, for everybody.
Definitely. What we're going to do is going to take you right back to around about sort of 2004, which is when I believe you started your first ever ambition of trying to run a marathon, which is the New York Marathon. Sure. Do you want to tell us about what happened and why you wanted to do it?
Yeah, I think when you've got those aspirations, sporting wise, especially marathons as well, it's such a massive like goal for anybody. For me, as a disabled youngster, I was looking for like role models and people that would kind of give me hope and aspiration for the future. And so Terry Fox was somebody that I aspired to be like, because he was a single leg amputee that started running, Canadian athlete, and marathon was his chosen distance. And for me, that I kind of saw that there wasn't many other role models that looked like me or people that I could think, actually, that's possible. So yeah, in 2004, after other sports participated in swimming and other areas of athletics, kind of took the plunge with running the New York Marathon. I'd worked in America for a year. I worked in America on the Camp America scheme and ran the water sports program over there. Came back, then was working in teaching, and I just was like, right, I need to have some aspiration within my life that really did challenge me and the perception of what was possible.
I like that, Richard, and thank you so much for joining us. You talk about the fact that you literally had no people to look up to, people who looked exactly like you. Let me just take you back to where it all started. You in the gym, you're running on the treadmill. What is it about running up that treadmill that really got you thinking about, just running for a living, basically?
Yeah, I would say you always want that moment where potentially it's life changing, and if you've got barriers and obstacles in your life, which disabilities or impairments generally give you, and they're barriers and obstacles that other people put in front of you, not yourself, then and kind of running for me was always something that I was told that it probably wasn't a possibility. So to be able to showcase that it is possible and then hopefully change people's perceptions and what a person with a disability can do, which is anything, and the ceiling on what's achievable is kind of depending on the person. And for me, I kind of started my journey in New York, and then from there it kind of snowballed because it gave me the hope that yes, I'd run 26 miles and I'd achieve that goal, I'd finish that finish line, but it was only the start. So yeah, when I was training in the gym or running out on the road, I kind of thought, yeah, what where's marathon running going to take me? We all think about the Paralympics as being this pinnacle of sport, but that's not for everybody. And I've been fortunate enough to go to four Paralympics, and I also understand that there needs to be sport for all, and unfortunately the Paralympics isn't inclusive for everybody and continually has barriers for people with disabilities, where running or events such as running, if you take out some of the barriers to actually participate, actually getting on the start line, anybody can do it.
That's fascinating when you're saying about the fact that the Paralympics isn't accessible to anyone. And I think we're going to touch on that later on as well. But let's go back to that marathon 2004. And there was a reason that you were running it, wasn't there?
Yeah,
And
for
also, do
sure.
you want to tell us about what happened about, right before you started the race in terms of the running legs that you received?
I'd started running on like sports cups, which are basically like some people call them stubbies, or literally just like running on my knees on the road. And I didn't have any running prosthetics at all. And fortunately enough, Osser, the prosthetic company, provided me with some running feet, or blades as they're known to the public. And those flex runs are the same shape of running prosthetics that I still run on today. So I was fortunate that I was given a set of those. And yeah, 2 weeks before the marathon, I had probably about eight or nine sessions on those running legs, and then ran the marathon. When we think about running events as well, normally people that run marathons run them for a cause, whether it's personal achievement or to run for charity. And one of my friends, Simon Mellows, who had sarcoma when he originally lost his leg, got secondary sarcoma. And the kind of I, when I looked at him and the energy he had, even though he knew he had secondary sarcoma, really did motivate me to get over some of those hurdles that I had initially with that training. And so I ran that for him. And on my early pictures, if you look on the internet, it's got like McMillan Cancer Relief vest who I was running the marathon for, as well as at the bottom it said for Simon. And that was to be able to do that was incredible, because it really did showcase that it's not all about medals. It's a or self-gratification. For me, it's about the opportunity to give back. And when you're a Paralympic athlete and you stand on top of that podium with a GB tracksuit, that also gives you a great opportunity to give back to the public that support you. And not a lot of people do that. They kind of have those moments on top of that podium and don't understand that they need to be reflecting the support that the public's given them and giving something back. So yes, it was definitely a moment for me of realization that sport isn't about self-gratification. It's about really reaching those hard to reach individuals all over the world. And in the UK, we have challenges and obstacles, some of those financial, some of those economic, some of those are mindset. But in the rest of the world, there's lots of challenges for people with disabilities. And hopefully with what I do, because I've run all over the world, people see that I'm overcoming challenges, but also achieving so much more than that. And then that hopefully inspires them to take up that baton and do something positive themselves. Not necessarily run a marathon, but actually do something positive.
You have done so much, and I find inspiration whenever I read your stories. I've been reading a lot about you, obviously, because I need to know a lot. Now you grow up, of course, you've got no one to look up to. You've got literally no role model whatsoever. So you've modeled yourself to becoming a role model for those who really also just want to do well, in Paralympics and, just running in general. So for you, what would you say kept you going? The fact that you had no one to look up to, was that the reason to say, I want to be somebody that people like me look up to in the future?
I think a lot of people looked at me as a person with a disability and saw the challenges and obstacles that I'd have to overcome in my life, and whether that was relationships, whether that's employment, whether that's participation, and for me, I saw a lot of those as challenges and just challenged the status quo, what was possible. So running was something that was so left field that I could have swam in the Paralympics, or I could have played wheelchair basketball, or but I really was motivated by the impossible, and the impossible at the time was running. And to start that journey and to know that it was going to be really tough, and it was going to have so many highs and lows as well, but they really challenged my physical and mental health to be the best person I could be. And yes, not having those role models that looked like me, but had a strong family network that enabled me to believe that the best form of myself was going to continually develop. And I look back at kind of that first marathon and always say that it was my biggest achievement, because I accepted that there was a challenge there in New York, which is thousands of miles away from home. But then it led to so many fantastic things since then. I wouldn't be a Paralympic gold medalist on the track if I didn't run that marathon in 2004. I wouldn't have run Comrades and Two Oceans and ran all over the world and done 80 marathons and 40 marathons in 40 days and all these incredible things without that first marathon. And the lots of things happened in that process of self-discovery, and I think we all need to understand that we're all on that self-discovery model, and we all need to be ambitious and work on our resilience and believe that what our dreams and aspirations are actually achievable.
You touched a lot on the fact that you competed in a few different events, different sports as well, sorry. One of them being sledge hockey, wasn't it?
Yeah,
And you
that's
actually
right.
competed in the Winter Paralympics for GB. What was that experience like, competing in sledge hockey?
Tough. It was a tough, and nearly didn't happen. I was starting my running journey just before that, obviously because of dates. And I went to school with Ian Warner, the captain of the GB hockey team, and I'd played a little bit of hockey before, selected for the team, been to tournaments, was quite influential within the team, one of the better players, but felt I wanted to kind of move away from that and then run as part of my kind of bigger picture. But then I remember having a conversation with Ian and some of the other guys on the team around 2006 and pushing for selection. So we went to the World Championships, came fifth, qualified for the Games, then the BPA sanctioned us to go. And even at that point, I was still kind of, I've got these marathons to run. Do I potentially get injured and not be able to run? But then the Paralympics was there. It was an opportunity. And it gave me a lot of learnings about what a strong team, what a good team needs to look like, because we had an interesting team dynamic. So in sledge hockey, it's like ice hockey, you have the same number of players on the ice, and each one of those players needs to do a job. And then you have players that are off the ice that then come on to be able to hopefully continue that process. We didn't have a strong enough team. We had people that had their own agendas. And when we went to the Paralympics, we were ranked fifth in the world, and we definitely didn't play like a fifth ranked team. We played like individuals that wanted to make their mark on the Paralympics. And I remember being in the shower after the last game against Italy, which we won, and saying to myself, this experience is not going to define me as a Paralympian, but I'm going to learn from the negativity that we had in the team, but also understand that these opportunities don't happen very often and embrace them. So I wanted to have the next experience that I wanted to have within the Paralympics was going to be a positive one, but I was going to be at the forefront of what that looks like and how that feels. And after that, obviously, my next Paralympics was 2012. And but that 2006 Winter Games did give me an opportunity to learn how important it is to have a really strong team around you. And that team needs to have lots of different mechanics to be able to work. You don't need to like everybody in your team, but everybody in your team needs to have a function and be add value to where you want to go. And yeah, that it became like a little bit of a learning process. I think it's really important. If things go wrong, then you generally learn a lot more than when they go right. So yes, I am a summer and a winter Paralympian.
I like that. I really like that. And also still on that note, on that hockey note, do you ever think to yourself, you know, where would I be right now? On a very lighter note, like, do you ever think of, you know, your hockey career as to where you would be right now?
What, if I was still a hockey player?
Yeah.
I definitely wouldn't have ran all the marathons that I've done. It played a part in my career for sure, and I've made some like incredible friends from that, and really galvanised my thought process around what a strong team looks like. But yeah, it was never a passion. Like, swimming was never a passion for me, but running definitely is. Even track athletics, like, obviously I'm well known for being a Paralympic gold medalist on the track, but I'm a marathon runner, really. That's where my heart is. And that's where I see my legacy continuing, inspiring people to go on their own marathon, whether it's 26 miles or just being a better person. I think the hockey scenario, the hockey journey was more about that was at that time of life, and it really did give me some perspective of what it takes to be a gold medalist, because I was looking at some of the other teams that were playing at the time. It was America and Norway were the really two big teams in the world, and I looked at their mechanics and looked how seamless they worked together, and I was like, well, that's what my team needs to look like to be successful.
we talked about marathons, and in 2012 you try and do your first marathon at the Paralympics, I believe, but the IPC turned around and said that you don't qualify. Do you want to tell us a bit about what happened?
Yeah, so it's a bit earlier than that. It was 2011 when I went to New Zealand. So I'd quite obviously qualified as a 200 meter runner, but also wanted to run the marathon at the event. And yeah, just because of the Paralympics and the qualification protocol and the classifications really does kind of hinder you as a person. It doesn't allow you to be as creative as you want to as a person. So for instance, if you want to be a swimmer and your disability, you don't have an event, then you might have to be a wheelchair basketball player or sitting volleyball player to actually get to the Paralympics. And for me, I feel that doesn't enable people to be creative, or doesn't enable people to have the opportunities that they want. It's pigeonholing people with disabilities, not inspiring and liberating them. So, for instance, as a child, my parents didn't go, oh, my son's got a disability and he wants to go to the Paralympics. Oh, he's a double leg amputee. There's not an event in running. He needs to learn to swim. Or it just doesn't work like that. You need to be passionate about the event and the sport that you participate in, and understand the reason why what you do. And so, yes, I obviously running the marathon, I was like, I wanted to run the marathon event in the Paralympics, the World Championships in 2011. They wouldn't let me run in that event. And then so I looked at, obviously, 2012. There was an event, obviously, on the road for my classification, even though in the past there was an amputee running event. But because of numbers, they chose to cut those events. And then I had to run the 200 metres, which is, I feel it's so bad for the national governing bodies, as well as the IPC, to not be forward thinking enough to actually go, we need to have a more inclusive games. Because what happens is, if you look at the program, you'll have certain classes. Like, I'm very good friends with Dave Weir. He's one of my best mates within athletics, and he's got potentially 100 meters, 200, 400, 800, 1500 meters, 5000 meters marathon. He doesn't choose to do those. He chooses to do the marathon at the moment. So for his classification, they have those range of events for men and women. For my class at the moment, the only event is the long jump. So how is that inclusive? How does that inspire people to? And they say it's down to numbers and the number of people that compete. But the only way you can get more people with my disability or any disability competing is visibility and opportunities to compete, but also investment. It's not my job or role to actually go out and find people that have got a similar disability to myself all over the world to compete against me. Somebody else within those organisations should be looking at a more inclusive environment, and they don't look at that. The politics in sport and the politics within the different countries means that they obviously look for certain aspects of the Paralympics and then fill those voids. So obviously, yeah, so marathon wasn't there. I chose to kind of go, actually, my Paralympic experience will probably be on the track, and then invest some of my time, well, yeah, over 10 years of my life, in running on the track, but always thinking that I'm going to come back to the road at some point.
I love that you didn't allow that to, you know, discourage you in continuing to, you know, participate in Paralympics. Now, let me take you again back to 2010, when you broke your own record at the Chicago Marathons. However, 9 years later, Marco actually broke your record. Do you think that, you know, the whole nine-year period it took for someone to break your record is a good thing in Paralympics? Because I'd like to believe that there should be new records being set every single, you know, tournament. But what have you made of that? That it actually took someone 9 years to break their own record.
It obviously shows how ahead of my time I was within that event. So it's yeah, it's from I'm obviously pleased that anybody sees what I do and then sees it as an opportunity for them to kind of have a challenge and kind of go for it. I knew that obviously when I ran 2:42 in Chicago in 2010 that it'd be really hard for anybody that's an amputee to be. Obviously Marco's a different disability group than myself. He's a different classification, and there's lots of implications around like height difference and things like that, which I won't really go into. But it's for me, it's about kind of I do what I do. World records are there as a nice thing individually to achieve, but it's not the be all and an end all of the races themselves. I just the reason why I do what I do is because I'm very good at training. I'm definitely not the best athlete in the world, but I'm probably one of the best trainers. I've always been strong at kind of just going in the gym and going on the road and really delivering gold medal performances every day. On the competition days, just then performing, just showcasing how hard I've trained, and then hopefully the times have come. And that's why I broke multiple world records on the track, and then obviously I still hold the half marathon record of 1:14:59. Nobody's got anywhere close to that, and the reason why this year I'm trying to push on a little bit and get back into my roots of marathon running, and kind of seeing how far I can go with that.
Yeah, brilliant. 2012 then, so you competed in the Paralympics for, yep. Is that your first Paralympic athletics event?
Yeah, that was my first experience on the track, for sure. What an experience that was. Obviously, never been beaten since. I don't think it will be. 80,000 people in a home stadium that are cheering on for home athletes. More tickets sold for the Paralympics than the Olympics. The buzz around the Olympic Village was incredible. And yeah, just like the moments that you can kind of take from those games that are things that I'll never forget, like watching my fellow teammates have success and coming back into the village with their medals and saying to myself, I want to have a part of that. And also hearing the sounds and kind of having all my friends and family in the stadium for that experience. And then just being brave enough to be able to deliver those performances under a lot of pressure, which isn't the most easiest thing. And then being one of only 9 athletes that have won Paralympic or Olympic golds in that stadium. So the ability to be part of one of those names like myself and Dave and Jess and Mo and Hannah and people like that, it's powerful, and nobody can ever take that away from me. However many gold medals I've won in my life, that one moment and being part of that collective is like really special. And obviously the day after I won, having my picture plastered all over the national papers and being in the media was fantastic, but a little bit of an eye-opener as well. You just don't realize how much of an impact you can have, and I definitely did that day. I think 2012 was an eye-opener for people that with disabilities in lots of different ways, around visibility, around aspirationally, but also still highlighted that there were so many different barriers and obstacles for people with disabilities in the UK.
You won the gold, didn't you, it was a T42
at the time, yeah. So yeah, I was 200 metres, yeah, came off the bend like 7th or 8th, and then blitzed it on the last 80 metres and won, right. And got the guns out the finish, right?
Yeah. And also I read that you looked up to the skies, didn't you, and dedicated it to someone.
Yeah, to Simon, yeah, for sure. And he's somebody that like continually inspires me to do what I do and feel grateful for the time that I have on this earth. And yeah, it's important that you remember the hard times that you have and the people that you've lost and left behind. And yeah, I think he continually, even now when the tough times I have, whether through injury or through like performances, really just motivate me to be the best form of myself. And then also understand that there's still so many people out there that are less fortunate than myself. And when I put that tracksuit on or put my running legs on, I feel that responsibility to go the extra mile for other people.
I want us to talk about this. You know, you get into running, you just win so many medals. There was a point whereby you were unbeaten. I think it was in 200 meters for 10 years. That is so wild. How do you train to ensure that you always give your ultimate best in every single, marathons or in any single thing that you do really?
Well, I think it's having people around you that motivate you continually. Having people that believe that you can push on further, and there's still areas to improve. I think the best athletes are always looking for more out of a performance, looking for those one percenters. I believed in the process that I had with my coach, Keith Antoine, who coached Olympic medalists himself and Paralympic athletes. And then understood that just getting one Paralympic gold medal wasn't enough, and then just go for more. And world titles, and yeah, four back-to-back world titles was incredible. And each one of those performances was special, whether it was in like Dubai or Lyon or in London in 2007, I think that was. That it kind of really did kind of go, actually, I know that I'm working hard. I know that I can achieve so many different things. And whether that's on the gym or on the road or on the track, I kept pushing and pushing the boundaries of what was possible. Always looking for the next person that would kind of come into my shoes and take over the mantle, really. And that's important that when you look at your career, you don't, it's not a flourish of achievement and then just stops. You need to be able to support, mentor, and guide somebody else in their journey as well. And I've definitely done that with athletes within my class, whether they're from Great Britain or South Africa, or on the road where people see what I do and hopefully kind of take up their own running journey to start to be able to achieve a marathon. And I continually do that on a daily basis. Social media has a great It's a great platform for people to reach out and say that they've got struggles, or they want to start running, or they want to be an athlete, or they want to work on their physical or mental health. And it gives me the opportunity to be able to give back through those mediums, really. But yeah, running for me, like 2012 gave me a great opportunity with all that success. People ask me how many medals I've won on the track or on swimming and stuff like that. The medals are very insignificant, really. The memories are the ones that I really remember. And it gives me great joy kind of looking back and realizing that I've done quite a bit.
You not only did well, on the field of play, on the tracks. Also, tell me about the day when you got awarded the MBE. I know that is the highest, achievement in the UK.
Yeah, member of British Empire, the MBE is something that I'm proud of for my family. And again, it's something that hopefully it's very reflective of the work that I continually do with my foundation and the work that I do on and off the track. I think those kind of awards sometimes are given out for sporting achievement that don't actually reflect on the actual achievement itself. When I mean that, I think that you need to do more than just participate. You need to do more than that. And so to hand out these national recognition awards just for sport, I think it's wrong. I think you need to showcase that you sacrifice not only your time for sport, but also other people. And as part of that journey, really kind of embrace what it is to be patriotic for your country, but also be a shining light internationally as well. And that's what's really important. I'm very competitive. Sometimes that competitive edge makes you like a winner. And sometimes those winning things are very selfish. And if you strip down all that kind of competitiveness, all I want to do with sport is support people that are less fortunate than myself, enable disabled people's ambitions, and provide people with hope. And so when I got that MBE, I took my mum and dad to Buckingham Palace, and King Charles gave me that MBE back in 2013 when he was obviously Prince Charles. And yes, a very proud moment for the family. Those kind of awards are something that I probably do take a little bit for granted, because they're more for the family than for myself. I feel a little bit embarrassed that I've got one of those when there's so many other people that have done so many incredible things that haven't got an MBE.
It's incredible, Richard, and you deserve it. And I'm sorry I didn't introduce you, Richard White had MBE at the start. I was going to say quickly about the 40 marathons in 40 days. I mean, you said about how you push yourself above and beyond. 40 marathons in 40 days, that's a little bit above and beyond.
Yeah, it's a lot, right? Yeah, so in 2012, when I won in the Paralympics, it gave me the opportunity to do some really cool things. Like I did a Splash TV programme with Tom Daly, who's a close friend, and some of the kind of game shows and things like that. But really, I wanted to emulate Terry Fox, who tried to run a marathon a day across Canada, but I wanted to do it in the UK. So running from Land's End to John O'Groats, 40 marathons in 40 days was something that I'd envisaged that it was a possibility of doing. So after I had my success in London, we had a strategy to plan to do that in 2013, which I'm thankful to my old agent, Rob Woodhouse, Virgin Media, all the brands that supported that process, Nissan as well with the vehicles, really did give me the opportunity to have that lifetime goal of pushing myself to the limit of running a marathon a day for 40 days. And that was so hard, so difficult, mentally more than physically, I'd say. Every day I had to get up and run 26 miles, but that was basically it. Where mentally, just kind of doing that when your body's feeling wrecked and tired and frustrated because it was maybe wet or you weren't going as fast as you wanted to. But then always envisaging the reason why I was doing it was because of the two charities I was supporting. So Sarcoma UK, which is the charity, it's a cancer charity that I'm patron of, that supports that supported Simon Mellows, my friend that died, and also Scope as well. And to raise not only money, but also awareness for those charities, which is really important. And again, you kind of look beyond the actual challenge itself. And for me, that was what was really important, that yes, every day I was feeling sore and had blisters, but there were so many people out there that were a lot worse off than myself, that had life-limiting illnesses that I could support with my platform. And that's what I chose to do. And I chose to do that over 40 days. Some incredible kind of memories of running around Loch Ness and kind of finishing at Land's End. And you kind of, those kind of times, I'll never get back. It's like, but it showed that an athlete, a disabled person from Nottingham that started running in 2004 could achieve these massive things. And I never envisaged that I'd be able to run the length of Great Britain, never mind a marathon. So yeah, some great achievements, and not always for medals. I didn't get any medal for doing that challenge, but the memories that I collected over those 40 days, friends for life, but also motivations to continue when the going gets tough.
Yeah, it's just amazing. I mean, thinking about running the length of Great Britain is something I couldn't even imagine. So it's a fair play to you, well done. So 2016, you're doing Rio, and you win 200 metres, gold medal again, and you also take part in the 100 metres this time.
Yeah, I nearly won that as well. I should have won
Nearly.
that as well.
Yeah.
I should have won that. So, yeah, 100s, obviously, if you see me run, it's not a strength at all. It's just not long enough. Not able to get up to speed. But so in 2012, I was seventh. I was like, right, well, I feel I can be competitive in this if I put a lot of time and effort, but also it'll help my 200 meter speed season. I put so much work in my 100 meters, and my S&C coaches at the time really did dedicate a lot of time to getting myself leaner and faster and stronger in that first 100 meters, just so that obviously I'd win my 200, but also be very competitive. Yeah, so I got I won the silver in the 100, gold in the 200, but I was disappointed in the 100 because I felt I was the best athlete in the 100. Just we had a false start. One of the Sri Lankan lads kind of pulled off just a little bit too quickly. I went with him, and at that point, I kind of knew that I'd maybe lost that chance to be a gold medalist just because I pushed off, and I felt that was a great start, but obviously not a legal start, so I couldn't obviously utilize that in the final when we reset. It was yeah, again, Rio, another interesting games, not the same as London, but in a way games that I felt I could push myself to the limits, which I did, and silver medal in the 100 was my best on that day. And so even though I was a little bit upset for probably about half an hour, I was fine after that, realizing that to get anywhere near those guys in the 100 was a massive achievement, and to also win my 100 was 200 was incredible as well. To back-to-back Paralympic gold medals, which not many people do that, and in Rio as well, which is a great party city, and I definitely had lots of partying after that. I needed to. I'd not drank all year as well, so I'd sacrificed drinking, and then I thought, right, I'm going to party, so I partied hard after.
We won't get into that.
Yeah.
So, other than party, you've also done lots of world championships as well in between all of this, and won medals along the way. 2019, you're also the team captain, aren't you? When you go out to Dubai for the para athletics, what does
Yeah,
it mean for you to become or to be the captain to represent?
so I was captain about six times over my 10 years. So over, I think I was team captain once for Europeans, and I think five times for the worlds, four or five times over the worlds. And that was when Pete Rerickson was performance director, as well as Paula Dunn. So it's great to have that opportunity to have an influence on the other people's performance through leadership, and I feel that those kind of opportunities are things that can really elevate your own performance, or hopefully support and elevate your teammates. So hopefully my fellow athletes that I was on those teams with felt that they could feed off my leadership, and it would support their performance. It's a great honour, obviously, for the performance director to showcase my leadership qualities and actually see them. Yeah, nice, just nice to be able to do that. There's a lot of responsibility in that. Sometimes it can be quite draining, but they felt that as part of my role within the team, I'd be able to step up to the plate and deliver that. It's nice to do that, and I know that they continually have those team captains. I think the team captain role is really important because it really does showcase what Great Britain's really about, and hopefully my fellow athletes have fond memories of me doing that as well.
Yeah, definitely. 2020 then is the Paralympics that then doesn't go ahead.
Yeah.
So it happens a year later in front of, well, there's no crowd at all, is there?
No, one man and his dog,
That
yeah.
like? What was that like?
Yeah, it's tough, yeah. Because 2020 was going to be my last Paralympic Games. I was in great shape again, invested a lot of time and effort, just come back from South Africa where I'd put a real strong training block in place. and felt that I was in great shape to win my third Paralympic gold medal in a row. And then obviously the pandemic hit, and yeah, just what do I do now kind of thing. Do I continue in the team, or do I sacrifice my athletics career and then kind of go to completely down the being a performance director, or go in a different route, maybe go back to marathons. But then after probably a couple of months of realizing that there might be a possibility of it going ahead the year after, then kind of go, actually, I still feel I've got a job to do, and whether I'm in the same shape or not, I'll still commit to one cycle, and whatever happens, whether it's gold, silver, or bronze, or even not even winning a medal, I'll go and for the spirit of the games to go there and embrace it. And I did that. Did I enjoy Tokyo Games? Not really. I think it was yes, a lot of athletes, some athletes went, and it was just a tick box, really. You trained, and some athletes chose not to go. Some athletes kind of went because they were already pre-selected from the World Champions success before. It wasn't great atmosphere because of lack of crowds. And I think it's real shame for Tokyo. The people in Tokyo that we did meet at the warm-up track and the hotel were, fantastic, and they made us feel at home. Obviously, I've been back to Tokyo since and experienced Tokyo, and I think not having the games there really did kind of put a dampener on my Paralympic experience and where it kind of finished for me. And also the legacy for the events moving forwards. Events have been dropped since Tokyo because of lack of numbers, but I think lack of vision really around what inclusive sport is about. And my real passion's inclusive sport, and I think having an opportunity for a young person and looking in a young person's eyes and showing that anything's possible is really powerful, and the Paralympics gives you that platform. I think Tokyo, because there wasn't a lot of visibility of it, didn't really highlight the great things that Paralympic sports offers, and it's showcasing sports that you might never see as the public, whether that's, like I say, sitting volleyball or boccia, or some of the events that aren't on television. And then also giving those athletes a platform to talk about their stories. And I always, when I'm on the plane to like holding camps or plane to games, I always try and speak to as many athletes as I can from a variety of different sports. And I've got lots of friends in loads of different sports, whether it's table tennis or swimming or cycling or whatever, and just kind of get a feeling of what their 4 years has been like, and the struggles and the things that they've had to sacrifice. And we're all in the same boat. We're all in the same game of trying to be successful and hopefully win medals for our country. But unfortunately, not every athlete gets the same platform to talk about it, whether it's on a podcast like this or on the television, or have that platform to get more people into that sport. And I think that's a shame because there's so many like characters within disability sport that not just inspiring, because that's a word that people throw around. I think relatable to some of the challenges that disabled people have in society. And like I say, I think Paris is going to be, for those that go, Paris is going to be an event that hopefully starts to unravel some of the challenges and obstacles that disabled people have it around the world and this country. Let's hope we can make some social change for people with disabilities, especially school kids that aren't accessing school PE.
Yeah, 100%. Are you planning on going out to Paris yourself?
Yeah, working wise, I think.
Yeah.
I'm super busy all the time, as you know, whether it's with sponsors or media. At some point, I'd like to maybe get back into performance sport. Maybe not as an athlete. Still feel I've got a lot to give, and that role just needs to fit my kind of passion and drive for sport, whether that's Olympics or Paralympics. But also to support my fellow athletes that have competed with and kind of gone to war with at the Paralympics in the past. And it's nice to see some of those older athletes still kind of doing their thing and in really enjoying sport as well. Because without that enjoyment, you can't do what you're doing. Because sometimes you see the serious side of getting on the start line and kind of 100% focused, where I like to see the athletes actually enjoying the process, because without that enjoyment, you can't be motivated to continue for another 4 years.
Yeah, that's so true. One more thing to talk about is the fact that you got the t-shirt of the jumper on now, which
Well, my
says,
foundation, yeah.
Richard Rogers Foundation. So tell us about that foundation. So what made you set that up, and what's happening? What events can we look forward to? And there's one in June.
Yeah, so I've got a really exciting event that we have every year, which is called Run with Rich, and that's on the 2nd of June, which is a fantastic, fully inclusive sport event that anybody can take part in. If you're not an athlete, if you're not sporty, you can come and join in. And we've got a 5K and 1 mile event, and you can walk it, you can be pushed, you can wheel, you can go in your electric mobility aid, or you go on your skateboard, or walk with your dog, or whatever. I just feel that fully inclusive events just aren't around, and we all talk about inclusion in respect that through our own eyes. And what we try to do is, when we put an inclusive event on, that everybody's included, so everybody has that experience, and however long that takes you. So in 2012, again, when I won my gold medal, I wanted to have a charity foundation that really support people that were less fortunate than myself, but didn't have the skills or the toolkit for setting up my foundation. So from then, went out and spent a lot of time in lots of different minority groups, whether that's humanitarian groups all over the world, LGBTQ plus, homeless, and BME, etc. And I think for me, it was really important that I had those tools that enable me to support people across the minority groups. So when we talk about the intersectionality approach of inclusion, that you support everybody, whether you've got these layers of barriers. So, for instance, if you're female, you're from the LGBTQ plus community, you're from the BME community, and you've got a disability, then you've got all these kind of things to navigate. And for me, that's really important that we have safe spaces to go, and the foundation enables disabled people's ambitions, but also offers safe spaces for disabled people to participate in sport, to support their employment, and support education as well. And the wider sustainable model is about supporting the communities around disabled people, because that's where the education starts. So we do that nationally, and then one of our events is in June, Run with Rich. We also support amputees all over the UK with a project that really does enable amputees to have the platform for their own personal success, as well as we do a supported runner program, which provides events such as London Marathon and the Run Series events with disabled people that used to stand or sit the other side of the fence to actually get involved in the events. And we provide them with guides or support runners to be successful. And that's what's really important. It's for me, when I first looked at my first marathon, I had that platform. And yes, I pushed it myself, but some disabled people don't have the confidence to be able to take that first step or have that first experience. And for me, that's what we do. We have people that work for the foundation with lived experience that can relate and empathize around the challenges that people with disabilities have. And then from that, start that conversation. Because as we know, the ability to communicate with the disability audience is quite tough, because everybody's different. But if we start that conversation, it does really motivate the disabled community to be more active, physically and mentally, to enable them to have a better lifestyle as well. Because we know that the 16 million people in the UK that have a disability, and not all those 16 million people are in employment or are physically active or have access to physical education in education. And we want to change that. It's a big job. It's a big job. It's a lot of hard work. I'm a volunteer for the foundation, so I don't get paid for that work at all. But I'm passionate about the work that we do, and hopefully by kind of following the foundation on social media and following myself, you'll see the impact that we have through the case studies and the stories of people with disabilities.
Amazing. If someone wants to get involved with Run With Rich or also any of the other events, where should they find
yeah, out? So the Richard White Foundation online, or check out obviously my socials on Instagram and Marathon Champ on Twitter. Yeah, just Google me, you'll find it. And yeah, but the 2nd of June, come down. I'm sure you're going to come. You better be coming.
if I'm trying out.
That's it. I need to race you. That's it.
Oh, man. I'm lost. I've also seen that you've been, you set yourself some goals this year to do 200 sit-ups every day. How's that going?
That's really good. Yeah, yeah. So I have like 5 kind of things that I have every day that I kind of go through and like read a page of a book that's kind of maybe something a bit left field, or do my 200 press-ups, 200 sit-ups, be thankful, and just simple things like make your bed and just realise that in that process those simple things do really matter. Sometimes people forget that those simple things kind of build on the positive things you have in the day. And then at the end of the day, when I'm brushing my teeth, I kind of go, yeah, I've had a really good day, but what can I be better? And then build on that. And this year's a big year. Yes, I've not got Paralympics in Paris for competition-wide, but I'm wanting to run faster on the marathon. So I've set myself a big marathon target of run 2 hours 35 this year or next year. Just kind of pushing on a bit as well. Age is just a number. I know I'm older than I... Obviously, every year I get older, clearly. But why should that limit you? I think what happens is you get to a certain age and you go, oh, I've done enough now. But I think for me, it's just a challenge. It just creates a little bit more interest around. Like, I'm 47 years old and I still feel I can be faster on the road than I've ever been. And I ran 2 hours 50 at Tokyo Marathon the other week. And my marathon PB is 2:42, so very close to that. I'm trying to push that on this year. So it's exciting. I enjoy challenging myself. And if I don't get there, it'd be a good ride to get as close as I can. I feel anything's possible, and hopefully your viewers and your listeners will empathise with that and kind of go on their own personal journey wherever that takes them.
Amazing. Yeah, good luck with that. I bet that training to race you.
It's crazy. Yeah, exactly. You need to get training, mate, I tell you.
Is there any messages that you want to give the people who are listening as well, just before we go?
I think for me, it's always about believe anything is possible, and society has so many barriers and obstacles in front of, especially if you're a disabled person, if you always feel you've got somebody to reach out to and talk to about those challenges and obstacles. I know when we're looking for support and guidance within the disability community, not all the information is readily available, but feel that you can reach out to people such as myself to find guidance, and don't feel like you're on that kind of journey yourself, because there's so many other people that are fighting the same fight that you're having. So it's about being positive and PMA, positive mental attitude, which I know some people say it's all right for you, but it's not. It's like everybody's in the same shoes, really. You kind of, every day is a challenge. And away from the track and away from the road, I've still got a disability. So that disability is 24/7. And that disability creates real challenges and obstacles for me. But yeah, use those challenges and obstacles as a learning process that make you a stronger person. And the last thing I'd say was, always understand that your disability is a resource, not a barrier. That resource that the able-bodied community can learn from. And when you're going for employment and you've got a disability, you need to kind of enhance that your disability can add value to that employment opportunity. And the same with participation and also education as well. You're educating the wider community through your disability. So don't be scared of that and embrace it.
Richard Whitehead, MBE, thank you so much for your time. It's been amazing talking to you. And good luck with everything going on, and good luck with the run of Rich and so on and so forth.
Awesome. I'll see you in June, right?
See you in June. If you enjoyed this podcast, then don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Join us next time on Disport Pod. See you then.
Sports Social Podcast Network.